Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I am doing well. I just cannot believe we are almost at the end of March and we are like 3.5 weeks away from Boston, which to me is kind of unreal. Where did time go?
I know. I'm really excited for our runners. I'm excited to go up. I'm not sad that I'm not running this year because I anticipated it. It's not a blow because I knew I wouldn't be running this year. So I'm just excited to be there and support our runners, support you, enjoy a fun weekend with you. And of course,
and you are running, you're running the 5K, which yes, I think is really fun. Like that's something to look forward to.
100%. I've never run it before. It'll be a great time. And they announced several elite runners who will be running the race, including Dakota Lindworm, which I think is so fantastic. And I think it'll draw a lot of attention to the event, which is great for the BAA. And we are very excited to be part of the BAA schedule that weekend. We've talked about it before, but just a reminder that we will be hosting a panel with Sheree Turner, the host of Women's Running Stories podcast. And that will take place on Sunday, April 14th at 2 p.m. at the Expo. And it will be on the live stage. There's one live stage event at the Expo, and that's where they'll be doing all the panels this year. And we are thrilled to be part of it. And we are so excited to announce that we have another guest who will be on our panel, and that is Elisa Harvey. She's amazing. She's pretty much a local running celebrity, but she should also be an international running celebrity because her accolades are so long, they would take up this entire episode. So Lisa, can you share some of her accomplishments without taking up the entire episode?
She is, like you mentioned, she's got a long history of victories and starting when she was very young and continuing to this day. She's qualified for the Olympic trials in the 800 meter, the 1500 meter, and in the marathon. She has actually qualified in 1999, she finished the Richmond Marathon in 2:49:28. That was her first Olympics trials qualifier. And I believe she's qualified many, many times subsequently for the Olympic trials, the marathon Olympic trials. She has won Army 10 miler multiple times here. That's one of our local races, but also a big, tracks a lot, a national field. She's won 2 medals at the Pan American Games. Really, her list of accolades goes on and on. And she's such a versatile athlete. To me, it's amazing. We were talking about this offline, but when I first started running probably 25 years ago in this area, she was the name at all the races. She won every race. And she was kind of a superstar 25 years ago. And she's still doing that now. So it's just so neat to see. And a lot of the athletes, the runners that I remember from 25 years ago, we don't hear about them anymore. They're not running. They're not on the running scene, but Elisa Harvey is the one name that is still here 25 years later. So really excited to have her on the panel, both just because she's a great addition, but also, like you said, because we've known her for many years and we've had her on our podcast and she feels like kind of a hometown hero to us.
Yeah, for sure. So if anyone wants to go back and listen, she was on our podcast last March, right before last year's Boston. And that was her first Boston and she'll be running it again this year.
Episode 167.
Thank you.
Yeah. Episode 167. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we're so excited to welcome her as another addition to the panel. It's going to be great. And we also just want to remind anyone who's interested, we are continuing to set up coaching calls for anyone who has a spring race coming up. We've had a few and they've been really successful and helpful to folks who have reached out. Just email us at julieandlisa@runfartherandfaster.com, or you can go over to our website and see it on the face of our website. And in that call, we will provide you with a discussion about how to help you best optimize your training and run your race. And then we will also provide you with some race prep. So if you're someone where you haven't had a coach through your training cycle, but you just want a little bit of help before you get to the starting line, feel free to reach out to us. We would be delighted to do that for you. And we do have a special running until March 31st. The cost of the call is $55, and then our price will go up a little bit after that. So reach out. We'd love to put you on our schedule.
Speaking of Boston and speaking of numbers, bib numbers were released this week. So if anyone listening is running Boston and has not yet checked, if you go into your Athletes Village account at BAA.org, if you go into your Athletes Village account, that's in the top right-hand corner, and log in and go to My Races, you'll see your bib number. And I don't think I've seen yet the breakdown of the corrals, but if you look at the bib, the picture of your bib on your account, it'll be a certain color. And so that will tell you your wave. So red is the first wave, white is the second wave, forgetting what the next colors are, but you'll know your wave by your start color, and then corrals will be released eventually as well. And those are all done by your qualifying time. So, which I want to, one other thing I was going to point out, this is interesting. I just looked this up for somebody last night. So my number is in the 10,000s this year. I'm in the second wave, and my qualifying time, as you remember, is my Chicago time, which is 3:11:00. And 20 years ago, remember, I ran 3:11:01, and I use that for my qualifying time for Boston 2025. I mean, so it's 2005. I use that qualifying time because I guess it was in the window, but I use that qualifying time. And my bib number that year was 4880 something. So my bib number is gone from 4,800 something to 10,000 with the same, almost exact, actually 1 second faster qualifying time, which I thought was interesting.
That just shows how much faster people, yep. I mean, first of all, it just shows how many more people are running Boston. Uh-huh. That's first of all. But secondly, how much faster people have gotten. And, you know, I'm sure in no small coincidence, shoes definitely help. And of course, just having information that helps you train better and train smarter. But wow, Lisa, that is
fascinating. Isn't that funny? Because yeah. I said, oh, yeah, I used the same qualifying time 20 years ago. Let me see what my bib number was. And in your athlete's account, it actually has your bib numbers from all throughout the years if you've run Boston other years. So I could look back and see. And that was to me just really pretty amazing.
Can you tell yet what sort of the general cutoff numbers were between?
Not yet. Not yet. We haven't seen. I know there's somebody who's does that, all that research and puts up a chart, and it's usually, I've seen it circulated online of the different cutoff times from each year. So I've seen them from last year. I have not yet seen them from this year, but my guess from past years is it's usually corrals 1 through 9 in the first wave, and then 10 through 19, maybe in the second wave, and then 20 through, 29. I think it's usually 9 corrals. So if I'm in 10, which I don't know if that's actually corral 10 or corral 11. Sometimes they do it a little differently. I should be toward the front of the first wave, the second wave, which I think is about accurate. Last year, it looks like the cutoff between the waves was like 309 or 308, I think. And so I would be probably toward the front, but yeah, you can look and see what it was last year. I have not seen the information from this year yet.
I like being at the front of the second wave. I think that's great position.
One year I was the first corral of the second wave. It was the first year I moved back from the first wave to the second wave, and I was in the first corral of the second wave, and I loved it. It was like clear sailing from when we got started. So last year I was in a farther back wave or corral, and it definitely felt like a more crowded start. So that information will be coming out soon. And when you pick up your bib, it will tell you, first of all, like I said, the color tells you the wave, and then it will say which corral you're in. And they are strict at Boston. So you can move back, you cannot move forward, and you cannot move back to the front corral of the next wave. So like if I said I wanted to move back to the third wave, I can't go to the front corral of that, because exactly what we're just talking about, it's a great place to be. So you can move back corrals other than to the first of a subsequent wave. You cannot move up, and they do enforce it, and they do check your bib as you're getting into the corrals.
Yeah, they're very organized. They definitely know what they're doing. So
I digress.
Yeah, no problem. That was really good information. And I'm not getting those emails right now, so I appreciate that. Yeah, so today we are doing a coaching episode. It's been a long time coming. We haven't done one for a while. And so today's topic is we want to discuss, as we're sitting here on March 21st, about 3 and a half weeks before Boston, we want to discuss some common Boston Marathon training and racing mistakes and how to avoid them. This does apply to Boston, but I believe, with the exception of maybe one of these mistakes, they actually apply to any race when you're about 3 weeks out. So those of you who are listening that are like, well, I'm not running Boston, is this going to be very helpful? Probably because they're really common mistakes. And how did we generate this list? Because we've made these mistakes and we've seen our runners over the years make these mistakes. And are isolated mistakes, are they determinative of your race success? No. But are they things that if you can avoid them will help you? Absolutely. So anyway, we're going to start off with some common mistakes in training at this point in training about 3 weeks out from a marathon. So the first one is not making a plan for sleep during the month leading up to Boston. And why are we talking about this? Because if you're like us, daylight savings can really throw a wrench into your sleep patterns. And it's difficult adjusting to daylight savings, although it's so wonderful to have more daylight. Definitely talking to other people, we find that a lot of folks struggle with getting to sleep early and sleeping through the night. So make yourself a plan over the next 3 weeks. Cut out evening commitments if you can. We understand, especially if you have kids and you have sports and things and driving, that that isn't always possible. But if there is a way for you to be home earlier so you can get into your bedtime routine earlier and physically get into bed earlier so you give yourself time to fall asleep, that is ideal. We've talked a lot about sleep on this podcast, and the reason is because that is the number one recovery modality out there. Quality sleep yields a quality race. So do what you need to do to optimize your sleep over the next 3 weeks. This will make a huge difference, especially race weekend when you've got all that adrenaline pumping through you and you're feeling a little anxious and you may have a harder time sleeping. Just accumulating sleep is really going to help.
Yeah, we always say that the night before the race doesn't really matter so much if you've had good sleep leading up to the race. So this is not too early to start. And I know I consciously do that now where I'm trying to get on like or just a really regular sleep pattern, going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time. But like you said, it's a little bit challenging. So many of our runners had really tough week, the daylight, you know, we switched to daylight savings time. It really does kind of put you off kilter, but plenty of time to get back on track. And make sure you're paying attention to sleep. That really is kind of the number one, especially because right now we're at peak mileage. And like you said, that's how our bodies recover. So the number two training mistake that we see often is as people try to squeeze in workouts. They feel like all the workouts on their calendar are the workouts they have to do to be successful on race day. And if they miss one or they're sick for a few days or whatever, they skipped a few that they have to get those in. That is absolutely not the case. It's much better to do a little bit less than a little bit more. And you really can't play catch up. Your body is not going to be able to absorb several hard workouts in a row or a bunch of mileage altogether after you've had low mileage. Look, if you have done the majority of your training, you do not have to worry about, there's no one key workout in an entire cycle. Just like sleep is kind of a big picture thing. Training is a big picture thing. Also, we've had plenty of runners who've gotten sick at this point in training or who have had to take a break for whatever reason. And they've had perfectly successful race days. So you cannot have a successful race day if you get injured or you're overtrained because you've tried to jam in all those extra workouts.
Yes. And I always try to remember this formula. Recovery is greater. The importance of recovery is greater than the workout. So if you are thinking about the calculation of I missed this speed workout and I want to do it today, think about it. How will that impact your recovery throughout the week? And if it's going to lessen your recovery significantly and not allow you time to fully absorb the work, then what's the point of doing the workout? So obviously, if you have a coach, check with your coach. But if you are training on your own and you're trying to make that calculation, just remember, as we're heading into race day, less is more. Less is more. Yep. Okay. So the next thing is don't add a new stimulus the month before the race. So for example, let's say you see one of your favorite influencers on Instagram posting his or her workout and they're doing a lot of hill repeats. And you're like, you know what? I feel like I haven't done a lot of hill repeats in this cycle. So I think today, instead of doing my easy run, I'm going to pick a really hilly route. And at the end of my route, I'm going to do 8 hill repeats. It's just 20 seconds each. It won't be a big deal. And then all of a sudden, 2 days later, your Achilles is bothering you a little bit because you haven't really had that stimulus. Maybe you've run a lot of hilly routes, but you haven't run hill repeats. So just really think about, don't allow what other people are doing to influence your training. Everybody comes to the race from a different point, and their training isn't wrong and neither is yours. Well, sometimes theirs might be, but neither is yours. So just really be mindful of adding a new stimulus. Another example is shoes. If you want to try super shoes, then please start working through that now. Don't try it the week before your race. If you want to get new shoes, get your new shoes now, break them in now, but do so gradually. Don't go out breaking in your shoes, doing an 18 miler. Bring them to the track if you're doing a speed workout. Maybe put them on for a portion of your workout, see how you respond, and bring your other shoes as well in case you don't respond well. And also with nutrition, hopefully you've been practicing your nutrition throughout your training. But if you decide you want to try something new, introduce it now, but introduce it gradually and try not to do it during a long run where you're suddenly going from never trying something to having 4 servings of Morton that you've never had before during a long run, just 3 weeks out from race day. So keep all of that in mind, that now is not the time to introduce a dramatically new stimulus.
And I would even add to those stimuli outside of running, taking on a new job or a new volunteer position or deciding to take. Now, some of this is out of our control, right? Maybe your new job starts or your new project just starts at work or you have a trip planned. But if you can avoid that, put it off until after the race. This happens a lot. And we're seeing this with some of our runners right now, is that they've got a lot on their plates and it's very hard to balance everything. And stress is, we talked about this before, stress is stress. So stimulus is stimulus. And if you've got a lot of other things going on, like if you can put off that new project or that new job or that trip that you want to take until after the marathon, probably a good idea. So related to that is just being mindful of recovery. And we just talked a little bit about that with trying to squeeze in workouts. But we are at kind of a peak training right now, right before we taper. And nutrition is really important. And a lot of people don't realize like how much fuel they need to not only to perform, but to recover. And this fueling that we're doing right now is really the building blocks as we get closer to race day. So making sure that you are eating enough, that you are listening to your body when you need extra recovery and taking those extra recovery days when you need them. It's basically, you're kind of like priming your body for race day at this point and doing everything you can to do that.
Yeah. And then, lastly, it's something we talk about all the time, worth repeating: avoid running your easy runs too fast. This is especially important now because you're fit, you're ready to go, you're almost at taper, and your body is like, everything's feeling easy. Hopefully. And if not, that's okay too. I don't mean to freak anyone out because sometimes things feel really hard right now. But once you're tapering and you're running less mileage, and you're feeling ready to go, you are eager to get out there and run. And sometimes you can run too fast. Just really try to avoid that. Remember that when you taper, that's your body's chance to really optimize all that recovery. And if you're running in that gray zone, you're actually impairing your recovery. You're preventing it. So do your best to have a mindset of, I'm going to go as easy as possible because this is part of my taper and this is going to optimize my training on race day.
Yeah, I think that's a big mistake that's easy to fall into, is that kind of taper craziness and panic that, I'm not doing enough. I'm doing too little. I didn't do something. I need to make it up now. I feel lazy because I'm not doing my training, whatever that is. But it's not, the taper is part of the training and it's really important.
It's hard. I was just going to say, it's hard because when you taper, you need to eat and you're not running as much. And I feel like it just gives you this sort of pent up energy and you just want to get out there and run. And it can be really easy to sort of feel suddenly going from, oh, I'm ready to go, I'm so fit, you get into taper and then you feel kind of slothy.
Yeah,
that is normal. That is so normal. And you should feel that way. And if you get to the start line and your stomach feels like a little like full and you're just feeling like you've got a lot of stuff in you, you should feel that way. Those are glycogen stores. You want to feel like you are getting that start line and you have optimized your fueling. It is supposed to be that way. It's not the best feeling, but that is how you're supposed to feel.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about the race weekend and, and those days leading up to race. And what's unique about Boston is it's Monday race. Most people get into Boston Saturday, some on Friday. So you've got a few days. It's not like a lot of races you fly in the day before, you go to pack a pickup, you wake up the next morning, you run the race and you're out. Boston you'll be there a couple days. And not only that, but Boston is like a whole weekend celebration. We've said this before, but you and I always get to Sunday night and we're like, oh my gosh, we have to run a race tomorrow. Like, because we're exhausted from the weekend. So don't make our mistakes that we often have made in the past. And I every year try to get more and more conscious of not making. And especially if it's your first Boston, the tendency is to want to go see everything and do everything. But watch how much time you're spending on your feet, running around all day, that kind of adrenaline that you've got, maybe forgetting to grab lunch or bring your water bottle with you while you're walking around and you're out all day. You're out of your, I know the times before that I've left the hotel, you know, been back 4, 5, 6 hours later and been like, I don't think I drank anything, or, oh shoot, it's past lunchtime. Like, really watch how much time you're on your feet. The temptation is to go to the expo, walk around the expo a ton, go walk down to Fan Fest. Like, it's all great. Take it all in, but try to space it out. Watch how much time you're on your feet. How many, I mean, you could get in 20,000 steps easily a day, just doing, you know, doing things in the city and things related to the marathon. So really watch the time on your feet. Just be cognizant of that. If you want to spend more time in Boston, stay Tuesday, Wednesday, use that time to go walk around and go explore Boston. But before that, just be really cognizant of the time that you're spending on your feet.
So what do you say though to folks who it's might be their only Boston Marathon and like, or they haven't ever experienced it and they really want to, how do you balance that? I mean, it's really hard. So what
it's
would
a great
you say?
Question. And it's easy to slip. Like, you can, you know, right. It's easy just to get there and you just lose focus on that. You're there for the race. And I think from all the years of experience we've had, make a plan. So first of all, sleep in when you get there. Like, sleep in. You don't need to be going for it. If you're doing a shakeout run, great. You can do that at 9 or 10 o'clock and do it for, you know, 20 minutes. Sleep in. Have a plan.
Come to our shakeout run at 9 o'clock.
Yes, 9 o'clock. Sunday. Our shakeout. We'll announce more of those details as it gets closer. But right, come to our shakeout run. But sleep in. You're not going to sleep past 7:30, 8 o'clock anyway. So sleep in. Take a leisurely morning, spend that time. Like, I love just like turning on the TV, and because that's not something I do at home. You know, it's just like kind of a lazy, be a little bit lazy and have a plan. Have a plan for when you're going to expo. We talked to Katie Hawks about when the busiest times are at the expo. You know, when it first opens, first of all, after she mentioned after the 5K in the morning, that's a very busy time. So maybe you don't want to go then. You probably don't want to go when it first opens. There's usually a pretty long line to get in. So find a time, you know, but just have a plan. I'm going to go to the expo from 11 a.m. to 12, and then I'm going to leave and I'm going to come back and I'm going to have lunch and go back to the hotel, bring your lunch back, go sit down somewhere. Lots of places in Boston to kind of grab quick lunches. You can get to go and bring it back to your hotel. You can do Uber Eats. We've done that before, but have that plan of like when you're going to be back at the hotel. Take the afternoon. Honestly, take some time in the afternoon just to like chill out, have lunch, put your feet up. And then if you want to go back out to go to the Fan Fest, same thing, have a schedule, have a plan, look at the schedule for Fan Fest. If there's somebody you want to see or something going on there at that particular time, figure out where it is based on where your hotel is. The Fan Fest is not super close to a lot of the hotel. It's not close to the expo at all. It's probably, I'd say a couple miles away, maybe. Probably a couple miles from the expo. And like for us, where we stay in our hotel, it's a good distance walk. So plan it out. The tea is really convenient. And it's, you can buy like a weekend pass and it's cheap, super convenient. So plan out how you're getting there. Are you going to take an Uber? Are you going to take the tea? Think about the walking, because again, it's not an insignificant amount of walking. Maybe you walk one way and then you take the Uber back. But again, have a plan. Say, I'm going to go to the Fan Fest from, you know, 3 to 4 p.m. And then I'm going to come back into the hotel and I'm going to rest. So I would say that my suggestion would be have a plan and space it out throughout the day where you've got times where you come back to the hotel, wherever you're staying, where you've got your water and your snacks and you can put your feet up and just keep it limited when you get out. And again, you've got the whole weekend. So if you're there Saturday and Sunday, you can space it out. You can say, okay, I'm going to go walk down Newbury Street tomorrow. And I'm going to do that for an hour from 12 to 3. It's very, very crowded in Boston Marathon weekend. So getting around, even just walking through the sidewalks in the streets is very like, I think it's very stressful and very, like you said, a lot of adrenaline, and it's exhausting. It's exhausting. And it's exciting and it's fun, and you definitely want to soak it in. Another suggestion would be to go to Boston Common and find a bench and sit down and watch people watch. Like, you can soak in the atmosphere of what's going around in the city, just kind of sitting down on a bench and watching. So those are my tips.
I would add one more, and that is, if the weather is going to look at the weather, and if it's going to be chilly,
yes,
bundle up, because you waste a lot of energy trying to stay warm. I remember a few years where we
made
that mistake where, you know, we brought layers, but we both get cold easily, and we both were just cold the whole weekend. And it's like, just pack that winter jacket, because so what if you end up not wearing it? Throw it in, because you do not want to waste any energy staying warm the days leading up to the race. It just makes you more tired. And speaking of weather, try not to stress about the weather. We know easier said than done. We totally get it. But just remember that regardless of the weather, it's going to be an amazing experience. We have run this race in all kinds of weather, and whatever the weather is, it's the same race. The people are still out there cheering. The course is still the same. And the energy is still the same. So just know that even if it's not the most ideal weather, it will not be a repeat of 2018. We know it. But even if it's not the most
ideal weather, you will
cross that finish line with the same pride as if the weather was optimal. So just really try not to allow that to
consume your mind.
Yeah. Right. It's a joyful weekend.
Well, it's stressful, and it can consume a lot of energy stressing out about it. The other thing I would also mention, I talked about briefly, like not skipping meals and water, you know, drinking, is either bring stuff with you. Like if you're checking luggage and you want to bring waters or whatever you like to drink or, you know, eat with you, bring it with you. Or there are grocery stores. There's a Trader Joe's, there's a Star Market that's right near the expo. When you get to town, go stock up on what you think you're going to need in your room so that you have it. Like, again, you're not kind of scrambling for, oh no, I haven't had anything to drink all day. Now I need to go find a bottle of water somewhere, or a Gatorade, or whatever you're going to be drinking. Kind of plan ahead and stock up on that.
I mean, hopefully a lot of folks are also using products like Element Noon, where you can just bring your tablets or your powders and just throw them in your own water bottle. And that's easiest. And then you're not having to, you know, it's also environmentally better, but it just drinking what you've normally been drinking, because hopefully everyone is drinking a lot of electrolytes throughout the day anyway, even when you're not running. So right. Hopefully that is something you definitely want to pack. And
yeah. Bottom line is, you want to get to Sunday night and not feel like, oh shit, I just like trashed the whole race because I didn't eat right all weekend. I haven't drank right. I was up way too late. I was out on my feet all day. We've had that panic feeling. I have personally had that panic feeling on Sunday night where I'm like, oh my gosh, like I did too much and I didn't eat enough. And what did I do? I'm like totally. So avoid that. Like, let us warn you ahead of time, have a plan, make sure you kind of know what you're going to be doing, what you're going to be eating. You know, you've got all your clothing that you might need for different types of weather. So you're not stressed and running around to stores trying to buy, you know, extra warm clothes. They are there, but we've also wasted a lot of energy running into, you know, to buy last minute supplies that we forgot or that we didn't anticipate needing. So, have a plan. That's probably the best.
Yeah. We've literally made ourselves all these mistakes. So this is coming from a place. Yeah. So next we'll move on to common race day mistakes. Lisa, you want to talk about the first one?
So, you know, the tendency is, you know, Boston's unique in that if you're staying in Boston, you get bused from Boston out to Hopkinton. Buses leave pretty early. We've talked about this before. There is a schedule for the buses. You really should follow the schedule for the buses. They really work like clockwork. They know what they're doing. They will get you to Hopkinton on time. But the tendency that the adrenaline is there and you're excited and you want to just get to Hopkinton, and the tendency is to rush to Hopkinton, get out and get there early. Couple of things. First of all, do not rush through your normal morning routine, whatever that is. If you're eating, if you're using the bathroom, like if you need to get through all of that, if you rush, take it from firsthand experience. If you rush through that, you're gonna just mess up your morning. So don't rush through that. Wake up early enough. Plan when your wave is supposed to take the bus. And don't rush there, because if you rush there, especially if the weather is not great, you're going to be sitting outside in the cold. You're going to be shivering. You're going to be sitting on your butt on grass. There aren't very comfortable places to sit. So don't rush to Hopkinton. That's our first tip. Just follow the guidance of the BAA. Again, it really does work like clockwork. It will get you there on time. Do not rush.
I will say, we did get a question from one of our runners who had the misfortune of being on a bus that got lost.
Yes.
Occasionally that happens. Hopefully the BAA will continue to do everything possible to prevent that from happening, but mistakes happen. What we say to that is get to the Boston Common in time to board your bus as early as possible.
Yes.
So we're not saying take your time and board your bus whenever, but we're saying do it within the confines of the instructions to ensure you're not sitting in the Boston Common waiting to board the bus, but get online so that you are one of the first to board the bus. So you still have plenty of time between boarding the bus, even if it gets lost, and your start time.
Yeah. And unfortunately you can't control which buses get lost. So you could get on an early bus and they could get lost and get there much later than a bus that left late. Like you said, that's generally the exception. Some people have talked about wanting to go earlier with their friends. Again, it's a question of whether or not they will let you on the buses. Most years they're pretty strict and they actually do check bibs. So again, you don't want to be standing around the commons waiting. But if, in my experience, if you get to the commons about 10 to 15 minutes before your bus starts loading, you can kind of get up to the front where when your buses start loading, they'll say, okay, white bibs now can go. You're right there. You can get in a line. You can get one off, like you said, on one of the first buses for your assigned wave. I would recommend if you're not bringing a phone, generally on the buses, there's somebody who's got a phone or somebody knows where they're going, because a couple of buses that I've been on that almost got lost, somebody spoke up right away. Hey, you're going the wrong way. So pay attention to where you're going. If you're somebody who's familiar with the route, if you've got a phone and you're watching kind of tracking, or if you've familiarized yourself with the route, pay attention, you know, and if something doesn't seem right, speak up. But generally that does not happen and it shouldn't happen. And even the times it's happened, they have gotten there mostly on time. I think the one year it was the wave start that got there pretty late, but they still could start because it was a wave start. Bottom line is, right, just be on the early side of your assigned wave and you should be fine.
Yeah. So the next race day mistake is allowing the noise of everyone else to drown out your confidence. It's so easy to do that, especially because you sit on that bus. And if you're not bringing headphones and, you know, you're opting to not have another thing to carry and you left your phone in your bag and you decided not to bring that, this is all personal preference, what you decide to bring or not. But chances are there's not a lot for you to do, but think about your race. And in trying to stay calm, you overhear conversations.
It's striking up the cup. So again, this has happened before. Strike up the conversation with the runner next to you. Oh, hey, how are you? How are you? Good. How'd your training go? Oh, it was awesome. I hit like 120 miles per week and I did all this and I'm going to go out at this pace and I'm going to go. And your mind is going, oh crap, like I'm not ready for this race. And this person is so amazing. Everybody in this race is amazing. They're all really talented runners. They all have like amazing experiences. And you will absolutely second guess your training if you start in a conversation with somebody, you start talking about what they did for their training or what races they've run or what their race plan is. You can have that conversation, but do not let it panic you. Again, speaking from firsthand experience.
Yes. And remember, everybody comes to their training from a different place. And just because someone had a terrible training cycle doesn't mean they won't have a great race. And conversely, just because someone had a perfect training cycle doesn't necessarily mean they'll have a great race. But what other people do doesn't matter. It's your day and your race, and don't let anyone suck your joy out of your day. So it's totally normal to be nervous, but just don't allow the noise to drown out your confidence. Trust your training.
Great tip. That's something you don't really think about until you mention it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how many times have I been on the bus where I'm hearing the people behind me talking about their training or their pacing plan, or you're hearing somebody talking about, oh my gosh, last year this happened. It was so bad. And this happened to me. And you're like, oh my gosh, could that happen this year? Like, could that happen to me? Like, just, it's great. The bus is awesome. It's so fun to meet people from all over the world, really. But trust your training and trust your plan for sure. And in trusting your plan, the next biggest mistake that we've talked about before, and this is common in all races, but particularly Boston, starting out too fast. And it is absolutely worth repeating. You can talk to anyone who's run Boston and they will always say like the number one tip that they have is don't start out too fast. It's a net downhill start is net downhill. I think right after mile one, there's a pretty long uphill and everyone's always like, wait a minute, there aren't supposed to be any uphills yet. And it's net downhill. Most of it's very fast. The adrenaline is, I think, higher than almost any other race other than maybe New York City, where you've got people on the sides cheering. You've got everybody in your corral qualified with the same time as you did. They're all kind of going out at a certain pace and it's very easy to get swept up in that or panicky that you're in a crowd and trying to get out of the crowd and you speed up to try to get ahead. So there are just a lot of factors that come together at Boston to make going out too fast, too easy. And as anyone will tell you who's run Boston, that is the biggest mistake that you can make. So definitely, you want to relax and be able to take advantage of that net downhill, but you do not want to start out too fast.
Amen. And then also during the race, it's a long race. It's a marathon. It's 26.2 miles. A lot happens between mile one and the finish. So you will have bad moments. You will have negative moments. You will have negative thoughts. Anticipate those. Think about what you're going to do when you encounter a negative thought or a negative situation. So I will tell you that Boston is a race that has a lot of different microclimates, a lot of different temperatures, different weather elements. You could at one point in the race be super hot and then all of a sudden there'll be a strong gust of wind and you're chilly. So the moment when you were super hot, if you're not someone who enjoys running in sunshine, you may panic and that may lead you to a negative spiral. Try not to let one bad moment or one bad mile define your race. This is so important. I have to remind myself of this every time I race, especially the longer the race, the more opportunities there are to have moments. So anticipate them, normalize them, and make sure you have a plan to figure out your way out. So for example, when I run Boston, I often feel that around mile 15, because you just had the adrenaline of Wellesley, and Wellesley is such an awesome part of the race. You run through there and then you kind of hit this point where you haven't hit Newton yet. You've got a long way to go. You just hit your halfway point. You're feeling good. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh gosh, I have all the hills. I haven't even done that yet. And I'm at mile 15. Oh my gosh. I've got 11 more miles to go. This is me. So I know that happens to me every time I run Boston. So what do I do at that point? I make a plan. My plan during that point is to acknowledge that this is normal. This happens to you every year, Julie. Second thing is, I think it's probably about time for my fuel. I might take my fuel a little earlier at that point to have some control over the situation. And the third is, I usually look around and talk to someone next to me or help someone next to me. Because for me, helping someone else and saying, you got this, how are you doing, takes me out of my own personal, I'm feeling sorry for myself moment and allows me to think of others. And that personally helps me. So whatever it is that gets you out of your moment, anticipate it, plan for it, and then execute it on race day.
Yeah, that's a great tip for any marathon, because like you said, it is a long distance. And you just talked about fueling. And one mistake I've made, and I've talked about it before on the podcast, is skipping that last fuel. And we know from experience, by the time you get to mile 20, 22, you don't want to eat anything anymore. You're done. You just want to be finished. Maybe you're so sick of your gel. You can't take anything else in. You think, I'm so close to the finish. This happened to me a couple of years ago where I was at 3 hours on my watch. And I ended up finishing that year in probably 3:20, somewhere around 3:20. I thought, I'm going to be done within 20 minutes. I don't need to take this last fuel. I can't think of stomaching another Morton. Like, I just don't want to take it. I'll be done in 20 minutes anyway. The last 15 minutes of that race, I was dragging. I was like, I felt the crash. Like, I felt it. And I realized I should have taken that last fuel. So I make a point now every time of taking that last fuel. So you may be sick of it. You may be done. You may be just not even able to focus anymore, but really get in that last bit of fuel. At the very least, it's unnecessary. But it's a good insurance policy for those last few miles. Your body is probably running low in glycogen and needs that last little boost.
And if you feel like your stomach can't handle it, then at the very least take a swish of Gatorade or take a half a serving instead. Just something in your stomach so that you can get through those last 15 minutes, which are critical, especially if you're gunning for a particular time. I mean, you want to be on your game. And speaking of which, well, of course, we're coaches and one of our goals is to help support our runners' goals. And many of our runners' goals involve times. But there is a point at which you don't want your goal time to consume your race experience. So when you're at Boston, of course, if you have a time goal and you've trained for that goal, go for it. But at the same time, if you feel like for whatever reason, that goal is slipping through your fingers, it may be because of an element outside of your control, like weather, don't allow that to overcome you and not allow you to enjoy the experience. Boston is such an honor to run. It's truly a lifetime experience. Whether you've run it once or many times, it's always special. And you just never want that disappointment because you may not have hit an arbitrary time that you set to disappoint you. First of all, your friends and family don't care. They're just so excited for you that you're at Boston. And again, not saying that you shouldn't have goals. It's important to have goals, but try to remember that your value as a person, as a runner, is not tied to that number. That's just your goal. And for whatever reason, you set it, but it doesn't make you any less of a runner than from when you started the race. You're still the same runner. You're still awesome. You started your training back in December for this race. Don't allow those moments that maybe could cause some disappointment to overwhelm the whole purpose of this exercise, which is to have a joyful hobby that we all get to celebrate together at the best marathon, in my opinion. So don't allow that to overwhelm you.
Yeah, specifically, that's generally for all marathons, but specifically to Boston. You worked, you earned the right to toe the line. Do not let anything steal your joy from that. Like that's the worst feeling, is when I see somebody after the race and I say, congratulations. They're like, I suck. That was awful. I was so far off my goal. And I'm like, but you're here. You're at the finish line. You did Boston. Like, I know it's a little cliche to say, but you ran it. I get it. We all have expectations. And I've had those disappointments too, where I was like, you know, that wasn't the goal time that I thought I was going to hit. But, you know, but I will say from first experience, I think you know this too, I can't tell you my finish time for most years, from any year. I can't tell you last year what I finished in. No idea. I could not, unless I look back at the records, I have no idea what my finish times were. So I never remember that. I remember our experience that we had. I remember the weather. Like every year, I could tell you what the weather was pretty much every year, but I don't remember my finish time. So it's absolutely worked hard. Do not let anything, any person, any your expectations on yourself suck that joy out of that accomplishment.
Amen. And then lastly, I will say this, and this is so important. One of the things that makes Boston so special is when you make the right onto Hereford and the left onto Boylston, that run down Boylston is pretty long. The finish line is not close, but you can see it. So while that may seem like a negative, oh, finish line is so far away, I think it's a positive because that run down Boylston Street is so special. The crowds are amazing. The scenery is amazing. It's so iconic. So what a joy that you actually have more time to celebrate it. So whatever you do, no matter how your race went, take time to just take it all in as you're running down Boylston and just think about all of the things you had to sacrifice to get to the point, all of the people you're running in honor of, maybe in memory of, all of the people who are out there cheering you on, whether in person or virtually, and all of the things that you've accomplished in your life to get to that moment. And it's a celebration, and just take it all in. That's why you do it. Those little moments are big moments, and it will be fleeting. So enjoy every step as you run down Boylston Street and finish the race of your life, regardless of your time. It will be a special, special race.
Great advice. Well spoken.
So yeah, those are I'm sure there's many more, but those are the common things that we see as runners ourselves and also as coaches. And if you have anything to add that we may have missed, please feel free to write us and let us know. You can also chime in on social media, let us know if we missed anything. And as always, thank you to everyone for listening and for supporting our podcast. And if you haven't yet, we'd really appreciate a review or rating wherever you get your podcast, and sharing our podcast is how others find us. We always appreciate that. We've had quite a few new listeners lately, and we so appreciate and welcome. And for those who've been listening all along, thank you. Thank you. We so appreciate you. So Lisa, I hope you have a great week, and congratulations on almost getting to taper in your Boston training.
Thanks, Julie. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.